Accession number 30279, reel number 6.
By the Allies. They would withdraw and go inland, and that took an awful lot of time trying to dig them out. They'd scatter into the highlands or wherever and into the jungle. So Operation Samut was to put a force, a raiding force, not a huge attacking force, behind their lines. And they picked Division 3 because it was a major river and had all major towns and had quite a substantial Japanese garrison at the principal town called Cebu. So hence dropping the force in right in more or less in the centre of Sarawak. And the main thing was the Japanese had no idea how many of us there were. They had all, we gathered after the war, they thought there was something like up to 1,000 or maybe more lurking around, and there's 2 or 3 or 4 of us at times. And of course the whole object was, never a frontal attack, it was just hit and run and do as much damage as you could and get out without putting yourself into a firefight.
Let's talk about the preparation to leave on this particular occasion, lead up to heading off, and what that entailed.
This is to... Sorry.
I'll bring you back. So you landed on the river in a Catalina. What was the experience like of coming into land? Here's your next port of call, as it were.
Yeah, I must admit, the Catalina pilots are extremely skillful because, as I mentioned, it was right at the top end of the river, quite narrow, a dense jungle either side, and it would appear, as a passenger looking out, that might be only a metre or two wingtip to the jungle. So it was pretty close. And I gathered later on that, talking to the pilot, listening to him going crook, that to the landing party that was organising the... clearing the river of logs, which is pretty difficult to do in a place like Borneo. So he eventually lands, and it's got to be a fairly short landing because they've only cleared so much the river from debris and bits and pieces that are coming down the river all the time. And the next thing, of course, they paddle out in prowess and tow the Catalina to a little mooring boat, and we jump into a prow and go ashore, and then we're greeted by natives we haven't seen it in our lives before.
Well, it's just this whole sort of scenario. A young, I've said it before, this young chap, sort of coming from sort of humble background, learning how to canoe in an SB, and then mines on boats capturing Japanese prisoners, and now sort of being flown into a remote part of the world, an adventure.
Yeah.
This is what you joined up for.
Oh, definitely an adventure, and I must admit the native of that area were probably Iban and Dayak, and most colourful, beautiful tattoos. I have a neck tattoo right down their throat. Then they'd have stars on their back, tapering right down to their bottom, and then all their legs would be tattooed, and pretty fearsome sort of characters, and hair, long hair, which seems a little extraordinary for a native to have hair halfway down his back. But then they'd have great brass rings in their ears, so their earlobes would be weighed down by these brass rings.
Being dropped into another world, actually.
Oh, another world, really. And of course, they had little or no clothing, because the Japs had more or less, there'd been nothing coming in as far as. So they're sort of lap type of covering they had was often made out of beaten bark. So most of them very uncomfortable. The women folk, or the young folk, they had nothing much more than that. And of course, they were all bare-breasted, of course. That was another, obviously, unusual sight for us to see. And
obviously, for a young bloke such as yourself, seeing all of this, coming from, sort of inverted commas, a civilized part of the world to this, must have been a bizarre situation, possibly an embarrassing situation for you to be in.
Yes, well, we'd actually been briefed a little bit on the native population, because see, they were under the rule of a Brit. It wasn't actually, it was a trading company. It was Viner Brook, and he had established law and order. And he had a police force called the Sarawak Rangers. Things were, prior to the Japanese invasion, the country was run very well. Trading posts, law and order, some quite quaint laws, I must admit, and the district officer, who would be a Brit, he'd be sort of the magistrate, say. And if there was a dispute or or whatever, they'd come before the magistrate, and he'd say, now he'd hear everything, and he couldn't quite decide which way to go. He would then take them down to the river, because they're always on a river or a stream, and tell them both to dive in. And the first one comes up as the guilty man. appoint justice, but you can see what happens. One holds his breath, the innocent one can hold his breath longer than the guilty one. So he pops up and he's guilty.
How do you think the native population was viewing you? Flying into their territory to conduct a war, basically.
Yeah. Fortunately, when the Japanese first arrived, I believe they were very, very kind. They were looking after them and doing everything. Of course, that wore off very quickly once they assumed control. So you might say that 99% of the natives were pro-British, because that's all they knew through their present previous masters, not masters, Wynnebrook, who ran the Sarawak. And really, we had full cooperation, and we also had in the Samut Party their ex-district officers, and we had a chappie that joined us. He had the rank of a major, Major Fisher, and he was a terrific fellow. And of course, once he arrived, the word got around that. And the natives couldn't pronounce an F, so he was always Tuum Pisa. He's a tall fellow, you know, he's 6'2", very, very, and a wonderful fellow to have for communication. So, one of the things that I do recall. After we got ashore and organised things and, you know, did the usual thing, being introduced to the party leader, Soshin, and that evening, any excuse to have a little bit of a gathering in the longhouse. And we were sort of briefed at the etiquette that you don't wear any footwear in the longhouse. It's all right on the veranda, but you've got a veranda, and then the longhouse, which is a enclosed veranda, and then the rooms behind. So the longhouse might have, it'd be 10 roomer, so it's got 10 roomers. And so then they to welcome us, they want a little feast, so. And then they have some native dancing, which is fantastic.
Describe it to us.
Well, I suppose it's like, I think they base it on stalking an animal, say a monkey or a wild pig or whatever, and it's like a ballet movement, very graceful, and so all this goes on, and then he's got his a parang, and his parang is in the scabbard, and he's stalking around, and then when he's going for the kill, he whips his parang out and swishes it around a few times, and that's sort of the end of the dance then. But
for a young bloke coming into this sort of situation, if you were on operation during wartime, I would have seen it as a pretty good holiday.
Yeah, fabulous. Yeah, people still doing today.
People paying lots of money to go and find a nice place.
Oh, they
in,
are.
In a village, you know, sort of like a long house.
Oh, yes.
With going, no walls and all that.
Going through a long house. Yeah, too true. And at the same time, you're given a drink, of course. They like to drink. And I think they called it borak. It's rice wine, right? Sort of milky consists roughly. You wouldn't like to drink a half a dozen glasses of it, but it was, and of course there's no level of when they fermented it, what the alcoholic content would be. It could be anything, so it was reasonably strong. So I wasn't very fussed about it, but you'd always have to have a couple of drinks, otherwise it might have been showing that you weren't accepting their hospitality. Yes, yeah, so that was sort of the meeting, and we slept in the, well, there's nowhere else to sleep. We slept in the longhouses, but not inside, not in the room. No, we'd sleep sort of in the open or out in the veranda, because we didn't like parting with our boots. So if you have to sort of move quickly, no use to having your boots off. But that didn't arise, quite frankly, because the natives knew where the Japs were. And they, at the stage, they weren't really venturing out, and they wouldn't venture out anywhere at night time.
Well, I was going to ask, what were you being told about the general situation at the time? And given the state that the Japanese were on these islands in a lot of cases, what was the threat? What was the danger?
Well, there was in the garrisons, they were quite a formidable force. Now, they could be roughly, not that we could ever get an accurate count, because the natives generally exaggerate a bit, I must admit, but in a place like, which I'll tell you shortly, there could be at least 100 or 200 odd at a garrison. But they were, after we did the welcome, you might say, by the locals, and then Soshin wanted to move downstream to a place called Kapit, which they'd planned to become headquarters. And we were at the other side of the rapids called Pilgus Rapids. Anyway, they were huge rapids, like you said. So of course, the only way you move is by prow downstream. And I always remember that we were heading downstream, quite poor getting to the rapids where we wouldn't. The native would take the prowess around, but we'd walk around, because it was a pretty dangerous. I sighted a couple of, and a couple of natives, and now he said, "Boyo, boyo," and we looked up, and it was crocodile, their name for crocodile, and there were the most huge. I've never seen anything so big. You know, I've seen obviously films and things sort of crocodiles, but these were big. They were, looked to me as long as a prow, which was about 20 feet, and they were both a couple of these. And of course, the side of the Rudyang River is, as you imagine, in the wet season, it probably rises about 10 feet or something, and it's just glassy mud either side. And next thing, these two whacking big crocs just slid down into the Rudyang, and they were saying to us, "Oh, come on, come on, shoot!" Of course, you're in a prowl to try to shoot a crocodile. Of course, what we had, I don't think the bullet would bounce off these things that are so huge. Yeah. So anyway, we got down to the rapids, as I was saying, that we got out of the prow and the whole party, we walked around, met them on the downside, and then into Cabot. Now, there'd been a bit of toing and froming going there. The Japs had, there'd been a bit of firefight, and they'd got out, went downstream to a place called Song, and so we virtually, you know, you might say walked in. But see, the problem with when the Japs leave a garrison or a trading centre, there's bazaars, this and that, and in that vacuum, the natives, the Dayak or Iban, they race in and loot everything. And half our problem was trying to stop them from doing as much damage. But we knew why. They've just been forever restricted by the Japanese of anything, and they. And the other thing that they knew, that all their trading would have to be done with Chinese that ran the bazaars and what have you. And they always had in their mind they weren't getting a fair deal. And I think this was sort of harbored till they got to a situation that in a state of flux when the Japs had gone, and they raced in and grabbed what they could. And at the same time, unfortunately, which we experienced later on, where they paid back and chopped a few heads off, which wasn't very nice. Mm. And that was my first experience of seeing a beheaded body.
Well, this is real. I mean, up until this time, it's almost a sort of boyhood dream, and you sort of conjure up, you know, adventure of King Solomon's Mines and Raiders of the Lost Ark, all that sort of scenario. But here you are. You've now been privy to what war is about, what you're actually here for. Yeah. How did that sort of strike home?
This is something we were trying to eliminate this vacuum where the, and because they'd always be ahead of us because they get the ticky-tacky. But after I won't dwell on Cabot because that became headquarters. I set up there, our party leader was Captain Dave Carney, terrific chap. He formed a party, varied on what we were going to do. But the next sort of garrison old trading post with a song, which is this. And so we, the RAF came in and gave it a bit of a strafing, shook the Japs up, and here again, the same thing happened. They shot through at night time by launch downriver to a place called Kanawit, and we were poised to go in the following morning, but of course the natives beat us again. And this is where they took off a few Japanese heads. Also, they rounded up and unfortunately some Chinese. And their excuse was, oh, I thought they were Japanese.